This is Deanna Spingola. It is Wednesday, December 12th, and that means that it is 12-12-12, a date that the world will not see again for another century. This is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Jonathan Azaziah. His website is maskofzion.com. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's good to be back with you, my dear sister. I know that we haven't spoken for a very long time, and I know that we do have a lot to discuss today, but first and foremost, I just want to say, alhamdulillah, thank God that we have some good news coming out of Venezuela, that the President Hugo Chavez has made it through his surgery successfully. And I know that the Jews all over the world and all of their cohorts are very, very angry about it.
Indeed. I think they would like to kill all the nationalists, and as they have always done.
Yes, without a doubt. And I think that Hugo has been a thorn in their side ever since he came into power. And historically, the Jews have always dominated Latin America, going all the way back to the conquistadors, and the transatlantic slave trade really and truly began in Latin America with the Jewish Muranos. And they have always wanted to exert control over that resource-rich region. And when you look at Samuel Zemuri and his imperialist United Fruit Company that helped raise money for the Zionist regime, even going back to before the Israeli entity even existed, the Jews have had domination of Latin America. So to see Hugo Chavez and Bolivar in Venezuela now with him in power, he set off this revolutionary wave throughout Latin America, and that more and more of these countries are staying away from Israel, staying away from Zionist-occupied America, and they're focusing on their people and their nationalistic ambitions, I really think, is a wonderful thing in a world where we don't see too many wonderful things.
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned the United Fruit Company, and definitely. I mean, even the Bush family had interest in that, and that was certainly set up to exploit the resources in Central America. Terrible, terrible things.
Yeah, and you, there's been so much said about the United Fruit Company and how that this was a quote-unquote imperialist creation, and you always hear it discussed in Anglo-American terms, and of course the Bushes did have their hands in it, as several other prominent Anglo-American families did, but the power of it, the root of it, was Samuel Zemuri, and it was Zemuri himself that had the United States overthrow multiple Central American governments, both in 1910 as well as in 1954. And all of the money that he had stolen from the Latin American people through pillaging their fruits as well as their natural resources like their oil and their natural gas, all of this money was used to buy weapons for the Jewish terrorists that then invaded Palestine. And this can be found in a very disturbing book called The Banana King, which is a biography about Samuel Zemuri. But again, this just shows, as usual, that you can speak about Anglo-American power. You can speak about imperialism without anyone breathing down your neck. But the moment that you bring Jewish power and Zionism and the illegitimate Israeli regime into the picture and you talk about it on a global scale, you're immediately shut down or shunned or ignored or all of the above. But for those persons out there who think that what happens in Latin America has no effect on them, or that the Jews don't have their filthy hands in that particular part of the world as well, they're dead wrong. The Jews have their dirty hands everywhere.
Exactly. I mean, just in Cuba, they owned 212,394 acres of land. They put in a railroad. And that was just in Cuba. And then they began expanding in Santo Domingo, Honduras, Guatemala, Panama, Nicaragua, Jamaica, Colombia. By 1930, the company had increased their capital to $215 million.
Yes, exactly. And this is another reason why the Zionist power configuration has such a disdain for Fidel Castro. Now, I know you and I personally, my dear sister, we don't agree with communist ideology, but first and foremost, Fidel is a person who is a nationalist, and he cares about Cuba first and foremost. And when he and the Cuban Revolution came to power, one of the main things that they did was that they kicked out all of the Jewish gangsters from Havana. And these persons had set up essentially a gambling monopoly that had exploited the Cuban people on every level. And you always hear from the likes of Zionist disinformation agent Alex Jones and several other types that the Italian mafia had a foothold in Cuba. But the Italians and the Irish and African-American gangsters and other crime families, they were all subordinates of the Jewish power structure led by Meyer Lansky, along with Sidney Korshak and other figures. And they were pillaging Cuba for hundreds of millions of dollars at a time. So it wasn't that Cuba and Fidel in particular, they wanted to kill Fidel because he posed some sort of threat to the United States. They wanted Fidel out of the picture because he posed a threat to international Jewish capital.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And of course, they always vilify all of these people and say the worst things about them. And then it just raises questions. And I think that they've done that about every single nationalist. They get you to start thinking, well, I wonder if that guy really is on the side of the enemy. And, for instance, like with Hitler, they say, oh, yeah, he was a Rothschild. Well, you know, when you look into it, you find that that isn't true. And so even the good guys, well, particularly the good guys, they accuse them of being communist, accuse them of being all kinds of other things. When in fact they are not.
Well, you know what's most stunning to me, sister, is that when you take a look at Hitler, if you look at his writings and you look at his actions, there is nothing, there's absolutely nothing that would even indicate that he would even be in the same room as persons like this, let alone actually do business with them or actually be bankrolled by them or anything of the sort. And of course, their main argument when discussing Hitler, and they meaning the enemy and even gatekeeper types, is that, oh, well, Hitler had a relationship with the Zionist leadership in Europe. Hitler had no relationship with the Zionist leadership in Europe except for one reason and one reason only. And that was because he wanted the Jews out of Germany. And he made numerous proposals, starting with the Madagascar proposal, for the Jews to leave. When that didn't work out efficiently, he allowed the Jews through the Zionist leadership to leave. And this was based on the Havara Transfer Agreement. The moment that Hitler realized that these persons were not just attempting to leave and to peacefully immigrate to occupied Palestine, but that they were looking to colonize Palestine and essentially set up Palestine, or what they were going to call Israel, as the central hub for their international crime syndicate, he immediately ended the Havara Transfer Agreement and pledged his support for the Palestinian people. And I've even have sources here at home in Arabic in which Hitler apologized to the Palestinian people for thinking that such an agreement could be made. So then when you also see that Hitler didn't just have a verbal or political disdain for the Rothschild family, he actively went after them, shutting them down in France, in Germany, and in Austria. And if, of course, in this case is a big word, National Socialist Germany was to win the war, I have no doubt whatsoever that National Socialism would have shut down the main Rothschild branch in England also. So there's no evidence whatsoever that would even suggest that National Socialist Germany was financed by Jews, let alone the Rothschild family. In fact, it's everything to the contrary. And starting with Hitler, where they accused him of being an agent of the Rothschilds, that he had Rothschild blood in him, that he was a Jew, a Zionist, etc., etc., they've used this same intellectually inferior argument for every nationalist leader from the very beginning, ever since then, going from Hitler all the way to now. If you look at Jamal Abdel Nasser in Egypt, Fidel Castro in Cuba, Yasser Arafat, who I don't particularly care for, but they accused Arafat of being such. They've accused Gaddafi of Libya, may he rest in peace, being of such. Ahmadinejad in Iran of being of such. They've accused Ayatollah Sayyid Khomeini of being a Jew. And we've even seen things like Hamas and Hezbollah, the righteous Lebanese and Palestinian Islamic resistance movements, of being created by Israel. So this is...
Oh, okay. We need to talk about that.
Yes, absolutely. This is their way of slandering anyone who actually resists them, because they know that the Jews have led a campaign of such terror, and where they weren't terrifying people and terrorizing people, they were tormenting them through usury. The Jews have had such a negative, and rightfully so, reputation throughout history. They know the moment that you accuse someone of being Jewish or being connected to Israel or connected to Zionism in any way, they know that their name is blackened. And this is their tactics.
Indeed. Well, I had a guest on my program just recently who did an article entitled, let's see, How Israel and the Americans Foster Islamic Fundamentalism to Stall Peace with the Palestinians and Other Imperialistic Objectives. And he said that Hamas was created by the Jews.
Well, that, my dear sister, is an outright lie. This is based on two pieces. One you find from Global Research, which they quote an Israeli professor who is a devout and admitted ultra-Zionist, quote-unquote. And the other one comes from the Wall Street Journal, which, of course, is the mouthpiece of Zionist Jew Rupert Murdoch. And throughout the article, the only sources that claim that Hamas was created by the usurping Zionist entity are, in fact, Israelis. And the lone Palestinian voice in this Wall Street Journal article is one who denies that Hamas was created by the Israeli regime. The reason why Hamas gained prominence is because Yasser Arafat and the PLO, they began making overtures towards the Zionists during the 1970s, and they abandoned their anti-colonialist one-state position, in which all of the invading, colonizing Jews would need to leave, whereas the Jews who had historically been in Palestine would be allowed to stay if, in fact, they had no ties to the Zionist entity and the Zionist military apparatus as a whole. Then the pressure came upon their head from the Soviet Union that you need to negotiate with the Israelis if you want to continue to receive support from us. So the Palestinian people saw their aspirations going down the drain. So that's why they put their weight behind Hamas and Islamic Jihad, because they truly represented the aspirations of the Palestinian people. And now we see there are certain elements of Hamas that find themselves aligned with the Gulf Cooperation Council and the Zionist regime itself and its puppet governments in Europe and America, whereas the Qassem brigades of Hamas, which is the military wing of Hamas, continues to have very intimate ties with the Lebanese Islamic resistance of Hezbollah, as well as the Islamic Republic of Iran. And all educated and reliable commentators say that there is a split in Hamas that already exists, and it's going to become more prominent and more public within the coming months, where you're going to see the military wing break off from the leadership, which is now allied with Jewish collaborators in the region. But the age-old lie that Hamas was created by the usurping Zionist regime, it's based on Israeli sources, and not just Israeli sources, but Israeli military sources alone. And this is to slander Hamas, because the usurping Zionist regime has always historically used this kind of propaganda to smear its enemies. And my question to you is, sister, if the Zionist regime had this visceral need for Hamas to exist. Why has it been killing Hamas's leaders for the last 25 years? And why did it put all of its weight, along with the United States and Europe, with the famous imperialist genocidal American General Keith Dayton, to overthrow the democratically elected Hamas government in 2006. If it was in the Zionist regime's interest for Hamas to be in power, they wouldn't have attempted to overthrow it. If Hamas's existence was something that was in favor of the usurping Israeli regime, they wouldn't have brutally assassinated Hamas's founder, the blind sheikh and martyr, Ahmad Yassin, several years ago, along with his son, with a Hellfire missile. So this is absolutely outrageous and absolutely untrue.
Well, it's very interesting. I had David Livingston on last week, and I actually saw his article, which he entitled, as I mentioned, he entitled it, How Israel and the Americans Foster Islamic Fundamentalism to Stall Peace with the Palestinians and Other Imperialistic Objectives. The opening statement is, and I quote, the Israelis created Hamas. And Dr. Henry McCow just reprinted this article. Apparently it was an article from a year ago, just reprinted the article. I think in the last 2 weeks. And isn't that interesting? Well, the whole program with Mr. Livingston was quite interesting. It was people in the chat room said, I think it was more like the David Livingston roast rather than an interview.
Well, if people are more interested in finding out the truth of the origins of Hamas and as well as the Righteous Lebanese Islamic Resistance of Hezbollah, they can read my article about Yuri Avneri, the famous Israeli.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I documented in graphic and meticulous detail in the first piece that I wrote about Yuri Avneri that this lie of the usurping Israeli regime encouraging the creation of Hamas and encouraging the creation of Hezbollah is not just a matter of propaganda or exaggeration, but outright unequivocal falsehood. That piece, with the grace of God, has circulated very far and wide, and I've received a lot of emails and messages and even letters thanking me for writing that piece and dispelling a lot of those myths. I think, sister, that because the Jews and their Shabbos Goyim have their hands in so many different things that people become paranoid, and in a lot of cases they're rightful in their paranoia, but in a lot of cases they go overboard and they think that because the Jews have so much power that they literally control the movements of any and every group of people in the world who are being oppressed by them or their proxies. And the reason why this is such dangerous thinking is not only because is it incorrect, but it also gets to the point where, well, if they control so much and they dominate so much, and if everyone throughout history that has appeared to resist them was in fact on their payroll, what the hell are we doing? I mean, what's the point to even write? What's the point to even spread information via radio, to talk, to do music, whatever it is that you're doing to resist them? What's the point if they control everything? So this is something that, and this isn't just because of my own personal religious beliefs, and I believe that the power of God will always be greater than them. I mean, this is for a lot of my secular and even atheist friends and comrades who feel the exact same way, that the Jews do not, in fact, have power over absolutely everyone, and we can look to people like Hitler, like Jamal Abdel Nasser, like George Habash, the founder of the Palestinian resistance group, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, like Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, like Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, and so many other people throughout history who have stood up to the Jews with all of their might. Some have been more successful than others, but they stood up to them because they loved their people and they loved their country, and they loved humanity and they didn't want to be oppressed by them. So I think we need to be very careful when we're dealing with this kind of information.
All righty. When in your archives, I want to make sure that people know exactly where they can read that article about Hamas. Was that in March?
Yes, I believe so. I have not written an article, unfortunately, for quite some time, but I do believe, yes, it was back in March. If you look on the side of maskofzion.com, you'll see the article there.
Yes. Let me just, that's very important. And the thing, too, is that people keep hearing the same thing, the same lies. It's just like Adolf Hitler said, and he was referring to the Jews when he made the statement in Mein Kampf, is that the repetitive lie, when they tell the lies so often and continue to lie, that people do believe it. And he was referring to the Jewish population when he said that. And it's, you are absolutely correct, and I'm so glad that you reminded me of that. We do need to keep remembering what these people are about, and yes, indeed. But yes, to read all of Jonathan's articles, just go to Blog Archive, just hit the down arrow, and you can see all of his articles. Please go through those articles. Thank you so much for reminding me of that.
Well, I just took a quick look on in my notebook, because I keep an archive of everything I wrote written too. Just God forbid that the that the monsters ever shut me down. And it looks like I put that up on February the 2nd, 2012, and the name of it is The Case of Yuri Avneri, Part 1, Shukran Israel Analyzed and Refuted. And I remember when I read that piece, I had a feeling that it was going to be a very supremacist-laden, arrogant, and propaganda-filled piece, and indeed it was. Essentially what Yuri Avneri's premise was, and Yuri Avneri, of course, his real name is Helmut Osterman. And what Helmut Osterman's point was is that Hezbollah and Hamas and the Islamic Republic of Iran should thank the usurping Jewish entity for their very existence, because without the existence of the usurping Jewish regime, none of these groups would exist, because they wouldn't be able to resist them. They wouldn't have their prominence of power now, because they wouldn't be fighting Israel. And I thought that this was just so typical of the Jewish mindset, that even after we have given our lives, so many of our people, Iraqi, Lebanese, Palestinian, Syrian, Egyptian, and let us take it to Europe as well. So many Germans perished in that Jewish war of survival known as World War II. So many of our people, of humanity, have lost their lives because of the machinations of international Jewry. And this arrogant son of a you-know-what had the audacity to say that we should thank Israel? Thank Israel for what? For murdering our people? For stealing our lands? For pillaging our resources? For raping our women? For turning the world upside down with its very existence? So this is where the problem lies, that the world should not just be divided between the Jews and non-Jews as they do, because that's their position. The world should be divided between those who are resistant and those who are not. If you are standing up to Jewish power and Jewish financed American and European imperialism and Jewish backed Gulf oppression, like in Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Bahrain, if you are on the side that is standing up against these forces, then you should be our ally. And if you are not standing on that side and you're spreading all of these other weird theories about intangible poltergeists, then you're not on our side. And I believe that people who spread these kinds of lies, sister, that the usurping Israeli regime created Hamas or Hezbollah, or that they backed the Islamic Revolution in 1979, or that the Rothschilds financed Hitler, or any one of these lies, it drastically takes away from our cause and is very detrimental, because it puts a defeatist mindset in place. And everything that we're trying to do, which is to inspire people to be courageous and to have dignity and to fight, it all goes down the drain.
Exactly. I got an email this morning from somebody I usually just delete all the emails, and I thought, I'm just going to look at this one. Okay. And this goes to what you've just said. Here they come. This will make your day. Well, boys and girls, today the fox is guarding the hen house. The wolves will be herding the sheep. Obama appointed two devout Muslims to Homeland Security post. Obama and Janet Napolitano appointed Arif Alakon, a devout Muslim, and Assistant Secretary for Policy Development, DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano, swore in Karim Shora, a devout Muslim who was born in Damascus, Syria, as ADC National Executive Director, as a member of the Homeland Security Advisory Council. Note, has anyone ever heard a new government official being identified as a devout Catholic, a devout Jew, or a devout Protestant? Just wondering. Devout Muslims being appointed to critical Homeland Security positions. Doesn't this make you feel safer already? That should make our homeland much safer, huh? Wasn't it devout Muslim men who flew planes into U.S. buildings 10 years ago? Wasn't it a devout Muslim man who killed 13 at Fort Hood? Please forward this information to any who care about the future of our country. This is true. Check Snopes and do read it. But is this not the most ridiculous thing? I don't know how old this was. I just got it this morning. So we have two Muslims that work for Homeland Security, and how many Jews run the government? I mean, they are everywhere. And we're worried about two Muslims, but this is the focus that a lot of people like to place. This is what they like to do, and of course they've spun the idea that Obama is a devout Muslim, when in fact that is just not the case. He swore his allegiance and his loyalties to AIPAC back in 2008.
Yeah, without a doubt, sister. And I mean, this is the very pinnacle of hilarity to me, because if anything, the appointment of two quote unquote devout Muslims to the government is a sign of how much control that international Zionism has over the government. These two Muslims, and I read this story the other day, these two Muslims were put into Homeland Security to somehow legitimize the international Zionist war on Islam. So the millions of Muslims who have been murdered in my native homeland of Iraq, and the millions of Muslims who have been murdered in occupied Afghanistan, and the 100,000 plus Muslims that were just slaughtered in Obama's Zionist war in Libya, and the thousands of Muslim men, women, and children who were slaughtered in Yemen, Pakistan, Somalia, and now Mali by Obama's Israeli-created drones. This is what exactly does this mean? Does this mean that Obama loves Muslims as he slaughters us in the millions? What they have been doing now since the age of the Arab Spring is that they like to put an Arab and Muslim face on everything to make it look like, well, the Arabs quote unquote support this, or the Muslims quote unquote support this, when nothing could be further from the truth. And this is another age-old Jewish tactic where they will put Gentiles, and specifically their enemy at the time, whether it's the quote-unquote communists or whether it's Muslims or whether it was National Socialist Germany, where they will put a person out in front and say, this is your leader, this is the person leading the crusade, while in the background, in every key decision-making, policy-making post, you will find a Zionist Jew. Not to mention in the financial sector as well, dominated completely and totally by Jews. The education sector, what our children throughout America are learning, dominated by Jews. So they put two Muslims, two Arabs at the forefront of a homeland security project to make it look like Muslims are benefiting or Muslims are supporting the homeland security agenda, which is Jewish at its root, when in reality, the persons who have taken the brunt of the homeland security agenda, the persons who have suffered more than anyone in the world from the homeland security agenda implemented in the wake of the Mossad false flag attack on 9/11 are in fact Muslims. So it just goes to show you how deep the Zionist psychological warfare goes, and it's very frightening as to how many Americans actually buy it.
And when you make all of these comparisons, it certainly adds legitimacy if you look at each country by itself, but as you have combined all of these countries and shown the similarity. It's very significant, very, very significant.
Yeah, and the thing that kills me is, I mean, take a look at for example, Joseph Stalin. Now, Stalin is one of the greatest mass murderers of all time. This man was a psychopath. This man was an absolute gangster. And when people speak of him, they only speak of him. They never talk about anyone else. So Genrikh Yagoda, who created the Gulag system, and Lazar Kaganovich, who's responsible for starving nearly 10 million Ukrainians to death, and all of these other persons, including Lenin and Trotsky themselves, who were both Jewish, you never hear their names, only Stalin. And when Stalin decided to go against the Jewish agenda, Stalin was poisoned to death on the Jewish revenge holiday of Purim, which, of course, is just a coincidence, even though Iraq was also invaded on Purim twice, and Libya was annihilated on Purim. And it seems that every single time the Zionists launch a war, it is in correlation with one of their twisted Jewish revenge holidays, and in fact, all Jewish holidays are based on revenge. So you always, and the same thing goes with Iraq. You, when you hear people speak of Iraq, the three names you hear are Rumsfeld, Bush, and Cheney. Meanwhile, the people who orchestrated the savage and barbaric annihilation of Iraq, every single last one of them was Zionist Jews. And Thomas Friedman, the Zionist Jewish columnist at the Sulzberger-owned New York Times, famously said, if you exiled these 25 men before the Iraq War, it wouldn't have happened. So with Paul Wolfowitz at the head, whose Wolfowitz doctrine is the very foundation of American imperial policy, and the central focus of it is the protection of Israel. So again, why is it that you are always speaking of Gentiles, you're always looking for Gentiles, but the persons who are the designers of this policy, the persons who are the instigators of these horrific atrocities against every single people, white, black, yellow, red, or indifferent throughout the entire globe, they're all Jewish, and you never hear anything about them. People really need to wake up from that. It's old already.
How true. And you also make mention in one of your articles about the individual that created the cluster bomb. I believe you were talking about the cluster bomb. It was when I was looking for the one article that we were talking about that I saw in your blog. Maybe it was in March. Where did I see that? In April? About the drones. Drones.
Yes.
The person who created the drones that are killing all of these Muslims was in fact, let me find his name. Can you remember his name?
If I remember correctly, his name, it was,
I'm sure it ended with Berg or something like that.
I do remember, alhamdulillah, Abraham Karam, who was an Israeli officer in the Zionist occupation's Air Force, and he's the person who brought the Predator drone to the United States of America. He is the founder of the Predator drone. So the Predator and the Reaper and the successors of these brutal machines of death all began with an Israeli Jew. And in fact, the creators of the atomic bombs that annihilated Japan and that have been used in Iraq were also created by Jews. But again, these are things that you just, you never, ever, never hear of them. And what's so stunning to me is that these people are literally harbingers of destruction, and they have been so from time immemorial. And the reason why they continue to dominate us to this very day, and the domination is more sinister and more dangerous than ever before because there's so much deception behind it, the reason why they're able to do it is because we're afraid of talking about it. You have the hydrogen bomb that was created. And we were told that it was created to bring some sort of peace and some sort of harmony, and that this was some sort of absolutely positively wonderful creation. But Edward Teller and Robert Oppenheimer and Samuel Cohen, who gave the world the atom, the neutron, and the hydrogen bombs, these are some of the most hellish creations in the history of mankind, and they have not brought peace. They have not brought scientific progress to humankind. They have brought nothing but death and mayhem and horror to anyone that they have touched, whether it was Japan or whether it was my beloved Iraq. So it is the Jewish mindset that we can find the roots in the Old Testament, in the Talmud, in the Kabbalah, that is the problem. And if we are going to get past this situation, it's not only a matter of looking to the great leaders who have resisted the Jews throughout history, it's a matter of calling a spade and talking about what their ideology is so we can counter it and eventually to defeat it.
Indeed, yes. And I was last year and this year also, I've had people on the program, Dr. Paul Byrne and Bernice Jones, who have talked about organ harvesting and that this all started with a small panel of people at Harvard University back in 1969 who decided that they were going to create a new category called brain death so that they could actually harvest the organs from living people, because you have to be alive in order to have your organs be viable and transferable to another person. And so what they basically do is administer a drug to you so that you are paralyzed, and then while you are living, they cut you open and take your organs, because your organs are worth more to the hospital than they would make if they actually saved your life or administered good health to you or saved your life. And so I've been trying to find out who was on that committee. And I think it's very well hidden, but I bet I know some of the people on that committee, and they were not doctors. And so when you look behind the curtain of everything, when you look at the Genocide Convention that they signed, I believe, in 1948, and I've done some studying about that recently, and that was all the creation of an individual by the name of Raphael Lemkin. When you look behind the curtain, and just as the author of, let's see, who was the author of, I can't even think of his name, that said, behind every action, behind all the governments, and this is back in 1848, you will find the same people. And they control governments, they control the health industry, they control the insurance industry, they control the media, and of course this is designed on purpose so that they can hide the stuff that they are doing. Because if they are in charge of perception management, either via the educational apparatus or through the media, they're going to cover their sins, their multitude of sins.
Exactly, sister. And perfect example is what is currently happening in Syria. There is this information now that there are U.S. warships that are positioned off of Syria, along with a couple of British and French ships as well. And I've had all of my closest friends calling me within the last 48 hours, and they've been saying, Zaya, Zaya, America's preparing to invade. And I tell them, They're not planning to invade at all. Where did you get the information from? And I tracked down the report, and I saw that it was linked to Debka File, which, of course, is an Israeli intelligence outfit that specializes in spreading disinformation as a means of psychological warfare against the Zionist regime's enemies. Why would the United States need to position warships off of Syria when one program on a Jewish-owned network like Fox News or CNN, ABC, CBS, Viacom, etc., would have an even more crushing effect on the public? All you need to do is show a picture of Bashar al-Assad and then a picture of some dead children and say, this man is a brutal dictator and his brutal security apparatus is killing these children, and we need you to support an intervention there on humanitarian grounds so we can save these children. And the American and European peoples who have been so awfully brainwashed by the Zionist media apparatuses over the course of, I would say, the last 100 years, but the last 30 to 40 years in particular, and it would have the same exact effect, if not even more damaging, because if you control the media, you control the minds of the masses. And that is what the monsters have done over the course of the last several centuries, is that they take the newspapers and then the radio, and then with the birth of TV, they took over TV too, and they pump their agenda and what they want to be put out through the airwaves, through the television, and then essentially what you have is a population of complete and total zombies. So even if they were to hear a program such as this one, or any other one of the thousands of fine programs that you have done over the last several years, or read one of my pieces, write it, they could be staring at it dead in the face. In fact, we could have dead Palestinian children with Israeli white phosphorus still fresh on their skin, and it wouldn't make a difference. And that is why the greatest war and the greatest battle that can be waged, at least on our end, since we're not in the field like, say, the Lebanese Islamic Resistance of Hezbollah or Iran or the Syrian Arab Army or like National Socialist Germany before them, since we're not on the front lines with rifles in our hands, the best thing that we can do is to put out this information to counter their narrative. Because if we don't have that, then really there's no point.
Indeed. Now, would you apply this to other things? Would you apply this to the BP oil spill? Would you apply it to say, Fukushima? Because we really, I'm not in Japan. I don't know what's happened in Japan. Did I witness a BP oil spill? Do we witness the things that we hear about that make us fearful? I mean, we really have to ask ourselves that.
Well, you know, sister, this is a very important question, and I guess the simplest answer, although it may not be the most complete answer, would be, why is it, again, even with these things, the BP oil spill along with the horrific Fukushima disaster, why is it even with these things in which you would think that Jewish interests would not have any hand in it, they'd have no reason to be engaged in such a matter, why is it that the Israeli and Jewish angles of these two horrors have been suppressed. In the case of Fukushima, we know there was it was an Israeli security company, Magma, if I remember correctly, that was responsible for overseeing the security at Fukushima and that allegedly shut down the reactors as well as the fail-safes, and that's what led to the disaster. And this was because the usurping Israeli regime wanted to see what kind of an effect such a shutdown would have on the population before they attempt the exact same thing on their mortal enemy, in which the Jews view the Islamic Republic of Iran as a modern day incarnation of the enemy of the Jewish people in the delusional Book of Esther. So with that said, why is it that the information about the Israeli security company, as well as Japan's ties with the Islamic Republic of Iran, why has this been suppressed? And in the case of the BP oil spill, the person who handled the silencing of a lot of people within the Gulf area who had legitimate grievances because their business interests and their family interests were affected is none other than Kenneth Feinberg, the Zionist Jew who was involved in the suppression of the 9/11 family's victims' claims. So we see this person's hands in it also, that has been violently and systematically suppressed. So again, with the same thing, yes, these two things, they absolutely have a kind of fear-mongering effect, and disinformation agents like Alex Jones, they like to tell you, oh, stay in your house, don't go anywhere, this is going to have an effect on your food, it's going to have an effect on the way you breathe, it's going to have an effect the way you eat, your health, you don't want to go anywhere. And they may even take the Jewish neo-capitalistic route and attempt to get you to buy things to make your lives better. Of course there's fear-mongering involved, but again, I think that the principle is still the same, that the Zionist angle of any situation that happens in the world, whether it's geopolitical in relation to areas like Latin America or the Middle East, whether it's in regard to immigration in regards to here in America or in Europe, or even natural, quote-unquote, natural disasters or geological disasters like with the BP oil spill or Fukushima, the Jewish angle, the Israeli angle, the Zionist angle is kept out of it, and that's why we have to continue to keep the pressure on them and never take the eye off of the ball, which is international Zionism, international Jewry, international Jewish capital. These are the forces that dominate our planet, and unless we have an open, honest discussion about these forces and how to defeat them, we're going to continue walking into a wall until we're all dead and gone.
Yes. And of course, this has a double function, is to get people to move from their current homes, such as the Superstorm Sandy and Katrina. What was behind that? Isn't that just redistribution of population in order to seize land that they put to other uses for their benefit?
Absolutely. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And this kind of gentrification process is something that they've been doing since the very beginning of time. In fact, this goes all the way back to the late 1800s. And personally, I saw it growing up in the projects in New York City, which was predominantly African American, Latino, and Arab. And the moment that you had Jewish feudal lords, really, not just landlords, but Jewish feudal lords and all of their capitalistic allies, when they wanted to build high-rises or they wanted to build hotels or more chain stores to get people to continue going to malls and further this idea of American consumerism, which is really just Jewish consumerism, they would raise the rent on people who don't have the money to do it, and invariably they would get them to leave and move into another area in which they really don't belong there, and it affects culture, it affects population, it affects crime rates, and the Jews and their allies continue to make money. And the persons who don't have enough, the persons who are poor, continue to suffer. And I think, sister, what bothers me the most is that all of us are in the same boat, no matter what our backgrounds, whether cultural, race, racial, or religious happen to be. We're all in the same boat, and we're all suffering because of the same people. And the greatest tactic of the Jews is to keep all of us scurrying around like cockroaches, as the Zionist war criminal Raphael Eitan famously said about our Palestinian brothers and sisters, is to keep all of us scurrying around like cockroaches at each other's throats, blaming each other for crimes that were committed and instigated and brought upon us by the Jews and by the allies of the Jews. And instead of focusing our energy against them and against their agenda, whether it's HAARP instigated superstorms like Sandy, whether it's a nuclear disaster like Fukushima, or whether it's imperialistic invasions of countries like Iraq and Libya, or fourth generation warfare sectarian terror campaigns like what is currently happening in Syria and Pakistan. Instead of focusing our energy on them, we focus the energy on each other. And this is just no good to anybody.
Which brings up the you mentioned the high-rises in New York. This is the same thing that happened in Chicago. There were a lot of high-rise residential areas near the lake, prime property, where a lot of African-Americans lived and had lived for a number of years, decades. And they recently just knocked them all down and are rebuilding. And all of these people have had to go elsewhere. Look at Indonesia. Look at Haiti. The earthquake in Haiti not too long ago. And Bush and Clinton got together and they created this this fund, this humanitarian fund. And it turns out that Bush and Clinton did not actually give the money to the people who needed it, but they used the money to build some very nice hotels in Haiti.
Unbelievable. And while we're on the topic of Chicago, take a look at Rahm Emanuel, of course, the son of a Jewish terrorist who served for the usurping Zionist regime's occupation forces during the first genocidal invasion of Iraq nearly 22 years ago. Well, yeah, exactly 22 years ago now. Rahm Emanuel, who is currently the mayor of Chicago, and he Zionizes Chicago more and more with each passing day, he took public money from teachers who have arguably the hardest job of anybody in this deplorable country. And he took that money and he decided to give it to the Pritzker family, Penny Pritzker, the Zionist Jew behind the Hyatt hotel chain, who was the biggest bankroller of Obama in 2008 and the second biggest bankroller of Obama in this go-around. So you have a Zionist Jew taking money from the people, giving it to another Zionist Jew for their own gains. And this is the way it works. It's not a matter of globalism. It's not a matter of just internationalism. This is about Jewish networking. We have something tangible. We have something with a face. We have something that has a distinct, very distinct ideology, and we have to call it out for what it is. These people look out for their own, only for their own. The tribe comes before humanity, and because of their deranged and arrogant supremacist tribalism, the entire world is burning a bit more with each passing moment.
Okay, this is similar to the $2.3 trillion that was missing at the Pentagon the day before 9/11. Where did that money go? Was that transferred by, I think it was a rabbi that was in charge of the economics or the fund, the budget there at the Pentagon? Who was that?
That was Rabbi Dov Zachheim.
Yes.
This Zionist terrorist was the Pentagon comptroller, and on September 10th, $2.3 trillion go missing, and over the next couple of months, another $1 trillion go missing, so $3.3 trillion goes up in smoke with this supremacist rabbi at the head of the Pentagon's finances, and where does the money end up? building new warplanes for the usurping Zionist regime, which were inevitably used to bomb my fiancé's homeland of Lebanon, and then were used again to annihilate illegally besieged Gaza during Operation Cast Lead. And there was never even a single committee that was drawn up for this, not a single report about it, no oversight whatsoever. This terrorist Jew literally stole $3.3 trillion from the American people. It wound up in the hands of the Zionist regime, which is illegally occupying Palestine. Not a word was said about it, and nothing happened to him either. In fact, he was recently seen as one of the foreign policy advisors for Mitt Romney. So it's just amazing, the seemingly revolving door that international Jewry has to dictate the affairs of the world.
And in the last couple of days, I believe I read an article from The Ugly Truth, talking about the fact that Israel was asking for several million dollars more to replenish their ammunition and their planes and whatnot from the latest attack on Gaza.
Exactly. The usurping Zionist regime wants $647 million worth of bombs and fuel and bullets to refuel their machines of war, because they depleted them during Operation Pillar of Cloud, which is another operation that was named after a bloody passage in the Old Testament in which the Jews are killing Gentiles. And the reason why they launched this war, there were many psychological elements to it. They wanted to lift the status of Egypt and Turkey and Qatar and pull the Palestinian people away from Iran and Syria and Hezbollah. But at the end of the day, this was just a good old-fashioned Jewish ritualistic slaughter. And the United States government, on the payroll of AIPAC, the Congress, the Senate, and the Office of President, all supported this genocide wholeheartedly, unconditionally. And what's even more deplorable is I have no doubt that the moment that Obama sees this request come across his desk to please his Jewish masters, he will sign it. And it's just another show of how deeply that Zionism has penetrated the American government.
Indeed. Yes. I just brought that post up and they posted it today. I just love the Ugly Truth post. I get, they send out several each day, and I highly recommend that people get on their email list, because Mark Glenn is fabulous at finding all this information and posting it, and stuff we need to know.
Without a doubt, and I'm very, very proud to be a part of the Ugly Truth Broadcasting Network, and I'm very, very proud also to call Mark Glenn my brother. He's a phenomenal man through and through.
He really is. Now, tell us when your program is. Let our listeners know where they can hear you.
You can hear me on theuglytruth.wordpress.com. You just look to the side and click on the live button, and I am live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with the Mask of Zion Report. We have a lot to talk about on tomorrow's program, but more than likely I will just be speaking about the recent UN bid the quote-unquote upgraded Palestine to a non-member state. I believe that this is a very dangerous development, although not all of my colleagues and comrades at the Ugly Truth or in the Truth Movement in general, they think it's a good thing. I vehemently disagree, and we'll be talking about Syria and also the unfortunate slur against the Ugly Truth, that the Ugly Truth is anti-white, because of a couple programs that Brother Mark Glenn and Brother Max French recently did with a Native American brother.
Oh, exactly, right. Yes, I read that and heard that, and I'm thinking, what are they saying? In fact, in the comments section for the programs, there was some very negative remarks, and I'm thinking, well, my word, they've just totally taken this out of context. They've just attack the messenger instead of evaluating his message, and I thought that was really awful.
Yeah, it was awful, and this is exactly what I'm talking about. That instead of us focusing on the commonalities between our peoples, be they European or Arab or indigenous or African or Asian or and everything in between, instead of focusing how long we've all suffered at the hands of these people and their deranged, supremacist, and chosenite objectives and beliefs. Instead, we're picking each other apart and thinking that, well, it's only our race that's going to save the world. I have a message for everyone who will listen to this program. Nobody's race individually is going to save this world. Whether you like it or not, we have to do this together.
I absolutely agree with you wholeheartedly. And when you think about it, there is not one group of people that have not been targeted by these people, because they view us as commodities. They view us as animals, and if it's organ harvesting, if it's sex trafficking, if it is whatever it is, we have all been victimized, and they are behind most of this. And as I say, look at every group of people, and then you have the multicultural aspect of things, where they want to mix up several cultures in order to create chaos, but they never do that. They never want that to happen to them. They're probably the most racist group of people on the face of the planet.
Agreed. And I agree with you also about multiculturalism. Multiculturalism, at least from the Jewish perspective, is not just to mix races, mix cultures, mix religions, but it is to destroy cultures and to destroy races and to destroy religions, in which all indigenous people, whether you are a European who is indigenous to Europe or you're an Arab who's an indigenous to the Middle East, they want all of us to come together and have our cultures, our languages, our histories wiped out, and then we can be united under the flagship of Jewish capitalism and Jewish consumerism. And that way, the histories of our peoples, of our ancestors who resisted Jewish power, who resisted Jewish tyranny and destabilization, whether on a spiritual, financial, or political level, we won't even remember it because we won't know where we come from. On the other hand, multiculturalism in the Arab world under Islam was something that always existed. And multiculturalism, I believe, is something that always existed in Europe, where you had various different peoples living together and respecting one another. But the multiculturalism of old and the multiculturalism under enlightened Europe, the multiculturalism under Islam, is vastly, vastly different from the Jewish multiculturalism of the New Age. In fact, they're polar opposites. And this is something else that the Jews like to do. Words with meaning, words with deep spiritual meaning, whether it's God, whether it's multiculturalism, whether it's resistance or revolution, or even a word like peace. Words like these have been completely and totally corrupted and routed by organized Jewish interests, where we now even need to watch our vocabulary, otherwise we're falling into a Jewish propaganda trap.
Right. Well, that is so true. The multiculturalism of old, where neighbors lived together with neighbors, watched each other's children, happened also in Palestine, until they decided that they were going to take over the entire country and created all this chaos and murder and slaughter and stealing of land and bulldozing of 500 villages and taking over the businesses, the lemon groves, the orange groves, the olive groves, all of that. Just awful, awful, awful. And they do all of that, and then they turn around and say, oh, look what they're doing to me. Look what the Palestinians are claiming, making these false claims. Oh, the Palestinians are putting rockets into Tel Aviv. They're putting rockets into Jerusalem. My goodness, they're probably doing it themselves.
Exactly, and that is what is so devastating overall. That regardless of our opposition to Judaism, the Jews in the Arab world, they did have a peaceful existence. There never was any issue between Arab Christians, Arab Muslims, and Arab Jews until the Zionist project was implemented there. And this destroyed not only the brotherly and familial relations that everyone had with one another, and it wasn't just Palestine, but it set the entire region ablaze. And that conflagration that began with the creation of this Jewish cancer, this Zionist disease in the heart of the Islamic world, it has not stopped burning to this very moment. And that is why, and I know that we're running out of time here, my dear sister, that is why I believe that any talk of peace and any talk of negotiation and any talk of coexistence with this deplorable and disgusting and illegitimate entity that calls itself Israel is futile, and there can never be any peace or coexistence with this kind of entity. The only way that the Middle East is going to have any kind of salam, any kind of peace, is when the Zionist project is dismantled and every single invading, colonizing Jew from the river to the sea is driven out and never allowed to return. And once Israel itself is dismantled, and all of our Palestinian brothers and sisters, along with the 10,000 Lebanese who were also ethnically cleansed during the Nakba, when all of them have returned, then we can direct our ire and we can direct our efforts towards taking down international Jewish finance as a whole. Because with Israel gone, that would be a major, major blow to their interests, inshallah, God willing.
Indeed. Well, this is a good place to end. That was very profound. I always learn so much from you, and I so appreciate your passion. And it's just, I've missed talking with you. Anyway, we have to do this again real soon.
And I've missed talking to you, my dear sister, and I always learn so very much from you also, and It, as always, was an honor and a pleasure, and anytime you'd like me to come back on, just let me know, and I'll be right there.
It is my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so very much.
And thank you, my dear sister. Salam.
Salam.